Hi, this is Christoph, and I'm so happy to be with you with a new edition of our podcast, Learning from Leaders. And today, I'm in the former capital of Germany, in Bonn, in the highest tower of the city, and I'm with a truly exceptional leader. Pablo, thank you so much for taking the time. Let me introduce you. Pablo Ciano is the CEO of the very successful e-commerce division of DHL. He is a board member of an organization with more than 600,000 employees, the Deutsche Post AG. And now, Pablo, I know you now since some time. I've seen you at the World Economic Forum. I had the pleasure to moderate a conference on mental health where you spoke at the European Parliament. I've seen you also here interacting with your staff. And one thing I noticed is that obviously you're super busy. You have all your 40,000 employees. You have a huge responsibility in a business which is ever changing so fast. Yet you remain calm when I notice you. Is that just the appearance? Or what is the secret of that inner tranquility?
Good. Thank you. Thank you, Christoph. Thank you for having me here. Hello, everyone. And thank you for joining the podcast today. Yeah, I think it's real, to be honest with you. Doesn't mean that, of course, every now and then that calm is going away and gives away to some, you know, stress. But overall, I am a reasonably calm person. I really enjoy a lot of what I'm doing. I really like it. As I like to say, you know, management and leadership in general is a very nice occupation and profession. It gives you the opportunity every single day to make a positive impact in a lot of people. I am surrounded by great team members, which, you know, help me keep down that calmness. And that's why I enjoy what I'm doing. You know, the purpose of our organization is connecting people and improving lives. That begins with our own, of course, employees. We help, of course, them grow every single day. We're also being part of their growth journey. So yeah, it's a very nice job. I really like it. It's a learning journey, always learning something new. And that's why maybe it's because I take it as a learning journey is that it feels so calm.
Yeah. That's a very nice aspect. I have noticed that with growing responsibility, that that lightness of the learner sometimes can get lost. I know that you're a sports fan, and I do remember that Roger Federer, when he won actually his last title, I think back in 2017 or 18 at Wimbledon, in the press conference, they asked him, so Roger, how come that you're not kind of bored, and how come that you as the master, they called him the master of the tennis field, that you're still going to the pitch with that joy? And he says, what, you're calling me the master? I feel I'm a student of the game. And maybe that is a very important, but not easy thing to keep, isn't it? That lightness of a student.
It requires a lot of attention, yeah, to keeping that mindset. You know, coincidentally, in the last week or so, I have had my mid-year check-in with all my team members, eager to listen from them any type of feedback that they have for me, both motivational feedback on what I'm doing well and developmental feedback of what I could improve. And that is part of the mechanics that we have in place in order to permanently listening to where we could become better leaders. And it requires, of course, a lot of attention to how we conduct every single day. You heard me talking about, you know, this analogy of putting your own mask on first, like we have, you know, in the safety briefings in the airplane, that you have the, you know, the mask. When the masks are coming down, they instruct us to put the mask on first ourselves before helping somebody. So I keep that very, very close to my heart, and I try to make sure that I start every single day first, you know, thinking, how can I be in the best possible grounded, balanced mindset to, you know, do a good job at work.
I remember that you shared that at the European Parliament. And actually yesterday, Pablo, I was talking to a friend and telling him, and he was at the European Parliament when you spoke. And I was telling him I'm going to see Pablo Ciano. And he said, oh, The one with the mask. And now you're putting up that mask for yourself every day, right? That oxygen mask to be able to serve, to be there. And we'll want to ask you, how do you do that? But apparently you also manage to kind of help your employees, to whatever 600,000 employees, to put on their mask. Because in a time when mental health is so difficult to achieve, the latest AXA report of the insurance company has shown that in Germany, Pablo, one third of the population says they feel mentally sick. I mean, that's alarming. Yet here at DHL, for the fourth time in a row, for the fourth year in a row, you won the award of the top employer in Europe. Yeah. And you have a very strong focus on well-being. Tell us, how do you do that? I mean, how do you tackle that incredible challenge to be there for so many people who have to perform? There is tough business, there is bottom line, yet to care for the people.
Yeah, it's for us, it all starts with our people. You know, companies like ours, we could all buy planes, we could all buy trucks and warehouses, but it all starts with the people. And that's why we aim at being a great place to work for all. And the ranking that you're alluding to, you know, is an external ranking that analyzes from feedback from our own employees. Yeah. And rank us against other companies. And that is a very, very important target for us. We want to have that external type of assessment, not only to look into our own internal KPIs, but also what an external entity, objective entity, can say about how we are creating that environment. And really, it all starts with the people. It all starts, you know, having all our leadership aware of that and making sure that every day, everywhere, we create a safe and inclusive and engaging environment. And it has to have those three ingredients. First, safe, because not only from a physical perspective, for us, you know, safety first is at the top of our agenda. We start every single operations review with the indicators of safety, physical safety of our people, but also, as you're saying, mental health, right? Yeah. And how can we make sure that everyone feels comfortable speaking up? The example that I was given before about having my team members providing me developmental feedback and where I can improve is walking the talk and showing by example that, you know, we all need to be open to feedback, and feedback is a gift. And it's always helping us become better people. So it starts with that level of safety, continues with inclusiveness. Of course, we want to be a great place to work for all, and the work for the for all term is critical in that term, because it's not great place to work for a few, it's work for all. And irrespective of where you're coming from, whatever preference you have in any dimension of your life, we are seeing beyond that. And then, of course, have to be engaging, right? Because we spend a lot of time in the office and in warehouses, and we need to have some fun, and we need to have, you know, the proper level of recognition and celebration. And we put a lot of emphasis on that. You know, when you go to our Employee of the Year celebrations, you know, it's really amazing. You have, you know, the red carpet type of event for our employees.
Nice.
A very, very important, you know, element of our becoming, you know, a great place to work for all.
Yeah, well, now being the great place to work for all surely has to do with trainings, with incentives, with salary, with a lot of aspects that you can, let's say, consciously give to your employees. However, if you look at the research on health-oriented leadership, one would argue that the biggest factor till today is being a role model, mm-hmm. walking the talk. And here in the podcast Learning from Leaders, our aim is to kind to be able to get to know the leader a little better. And so I would like to understand, how have you become the leader that you are today? What really shaped you and made you the person you are today?
Good question. Has been the entire journey. Been the entire journey since, you know, my early days in Argentina, all the way to all the steps, you know, moving to the US and, you know, having interesting professional experiences there with DHL 18 years ago, and all the way to now moving into Germany. So I think that has been, you know, a succession of, first of all, surrounded by great people. I have had the chance to work for great, great leaders. I've always put a lot of emphasis in aiming for working with great people.
Yeah.
And sometimes, of course, it's a little bit of luck. I was very lucky, but sometimes it's also developing your own network and who do you want to be associated with. So I have had a lot of that. And then is the openness for, is probably two things, right? Is the openness for learning, having that mindset of growth, you know, the growth mindset versus a fixed mindset. Growth mindset in the sense of not being afraid of failing, more being open to learning. I think that every single time that we step out of our comfort zone, and I have my, when I look back in my career, I have always been stepping out of my comfort zone. You know, even at age 48, moving from sunny Miami to not so sunny Bonn.
to take very rainy Bonn.
And with kids, you know, part of the kids here, and that, well, that was a stepping out of my comfort zone. But when doing that with the mindset of learning and not fear of failing, or not also attached to a certain outcome of success as well, so that you know, putting learning at the center, it becomes an adventure, right?
Yeah.
It becomes an adventure and has always paid off so far.
Yeah. Now, what sounds for me very, very interesting is to hear a little bit more about not being afraid of losing. I think that's easier said than done. It has a lot to do with self-confidence. Would you say that you had that sense of security? I think it's much easier to kind of explore, go into that world, say, I'm playing to win, doesn't matter if I lose, if I feel I'm okay from deep within, right? Is that something you had from the beginning, or is that something you developed over a period of time?
Good question. I think that I had developed that over time, and it had evolved. Maybe in my younger parts of my career, the self-confidence was more driven by high energy and willingness to work hard, and, you know, willingness to succeed in certain direction, and that motivation. And over time, that confidence evolved more into that whatever happens to me will be best for me.
Okay. Yeah.
And it doesn't matter really if it is exactly what I was expecting, a deviation, a setback, and it's not that much about, you know, getting too stuck into the outcome, or also the other extreme of fearing some negative situation. It's about the learning experience. And I think that those two things, about always taking these steps as learning opportunities, even though it is maybe a different outcome to what I have expected, asking myself, what has this experience, you know, given to me, that I am, you know, better now than I was before. And also, again, always any outcome or any situation is whatever happened is the best for me, because it happened.
Yeah.
And it's more about taking, you know, that as a step forward than anything else.
Yeah. So a deep trust that whatever happens is for almost for the good, and embracing that.
Absolutely.
And that gives them a huge power to explore, to move forward, to play. Now, you're super successful. If we look at your CV, if I look at LinkedIn, you have been running from success to success. And many a times, when we look at the CVs of successful people, everything looks straightforward. But behind, I think, every big success, there have been failures. There have been moments which defined us. We just talked about Roger Federer, and when he concluded his career, in his many interviews, he said the most important moment was, or one of his most important moments was very, very early, I think he was 19, 20 or so, when his then coach, Peter Carter, died in a tragic accident. And he was totally, you know, shaken, and that was the moment he started to take things serious in the best way, because he realized how precious time is, and he wanted to give something back. Now, in your life, Pablo, I mean, there must have been defining moments where you fell down, you had to stand up. I know that's personal, but would you like to let us in on some of your journey?
Yeah, you're right. It has been a very choppy journey. Actually, of course, what you see on LinkedIn or what we see in social media is only the good yes. aspects of the journey, but it has been, I would say that equally or even more to the very nice rosy picture that we paint in those type of social media platforms, equally, you know, you have setbacks, right? So there were many. I know I grew up in a in Argentina in a very wealthy family, driven by my father's family business, which was very successful. And, you know, because of the financial crises that were hitting the country every now and then, we ended up losing everything. So we ended up losing absolutely all the wealth. Actually, I ended up having, you know, my father didn't even have, you know, for paying the rent of his home. So I had to, of course, help him. And I did that, of course, with a lot of willingness to do so. So that is one of the situations yeah. that I shaped my experience, that always never take things for granted. Mm. Always, of course, those are monetary and financial setbacks.
Yeah.
Also taking perspective of that could be today with us or could disappear tomorrow. So I'm not really attached that much to anything material. I love to, of course, live well, but that is, less important than many other things. So put perspective a little bit on what is really important in life. Then I launched some personal businesses in that journey as well. So I was an entrepreneur before moving into the corporate world. And also I had some setbacks there. So, you know, some of those businesses didn't work as expected. And I learned a lot from those. I would probably say that from a career professional perspective, the one experience that shaped me the most was when I joined DHL. We were integrating in the US, we were integrating an acquisition of a company there that went really bad. And we had to enter into a massive turnaround. And we had to let go a lot of people, and it was very traumatic. But if there is one thing that I would highlight from that experience, was that we treated everyone with utmost respect, right? We were letting go almost, you know, 70% of the people.
Oh my God.
But everyone was really treated super, super well. And that's why I think that, again, it's all about the people, going back yeah. to the people.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks for sharing. And so in your life, we could say you have shown a lot of resilience, a lot of setbacks. You have been just talking about them. And of course, there's not one recipe to develop resilience. Probably scientists would agree to disagree, but to a certain degree, probably we could say there are four dimensions which are key. One, the mental aspect, right? Managing our mind, absolutely vital. Yeah. And the physical aspect, being physically well, but also the material aspects, having what I need, right? One of the biggest fears surely we all have, will I have what I need, or may I maybe lose what I have? Then the social component, mm-hmm. Having friends to share with, and surely that sense of purpose, inner purpose. So I do it for a good reason. If you look at these four dimensional, mental, physical, social purpose, what would you say typically helps you the most, or where do you go most to kind of bounce back?
Good question. I think that probably purpose is the one
yeah.
that drives me the most, in particular when you are facing tough challenges, because the other three dimensions are very important. Everything, of course, is a balance. But when you really need to be lifted up in a big way, I think that the other, you know, purpose is the one that has the max, at least for me, has the maximum potential. And that is the combination, of course, of purpose in what I do and my own personal development, but the confidence that I am making an impact beyond what I can learn and what I can do. And I think that is very, very inspiring. Going back to the purpose of our company, of connecting people, improving lives, we truly believe in that. And that is a way that is, you know, the purpose of what we do every day in the job, but also the purpose of making a positive impact in the communities where we operate, and having the ability to do that, and always keeping that in mind in terms of, you know, yes, we have purpose in what we do. I want to do, you know, my job every single day better. I want to help, you know, the team members and, you know, learn and grow and all of that. But also the purpose of the other half of what, you know, what we do, which is helping, you know, in the communities where we operate. In particular, I can come in from Argentina and having had the chance to work in developing countries where we can be a lot of influence a lot of how these communities evolve. So it's a purpose is a big driver.
Yeah. Now, we have done a lot of research, Pablo, on the topic of purpose over the last couple of years. And what we have seen is that across many organizations in many countries of the, on this planet, during the corona time, amongst these four dimensions, mental, physical, social, and purpose, purpose scored the lowest. And it's quite understandable. Research has also shown that in huge transformational phases, that's what happens, right? For me also, during corona time, I kept on doing the same thing. When you look at my title, I was still the CEO at the Telex Institute. Before, I was traveling the world, live with people, now I was sitting at home doing the same thing on a Zoom call. So finding that why in the new what is challenging. But also, I think many organizations struggle to transfer a why, which is somewhere nicely written on the wall or the entrance hall of every organization, to the many. You have 600,000 employees. How do you do that? I know it's never perfect, but you're living it. Otherwise, you would not be the top employer. What is your concept to make people feel that organizational purpose?
Yeah. I think in the COVID days in particular, we were very lucky to operate in the industry where we operate, because as you might recall, at some point in time, we were the only ones connecting people and improving lives. Yeah. And we were operating, and everyone, even if you were, you know, a package handler in a warehouse, or you were a courier that in those very difficult circumstances had to continue be walking around, or even in my case that I was sitting in my home or in the office, all of us felt that in that particular time we were making an impressive contribution to humanity. And that, of course, you know, carried on with the delivery of, you know, billions of vaccines, COVID vaccines, that we distributed around the world. So we were lucky in that case that we didn't have to scratch too hard to find the purpose. The purpose was visible there. We were being showcased in all TV shows and newspapers, and we were, you know, and in particular our team members that were, you know, walking the streets were real, the heroes connecting people and improving lives. Now, how do we do that in normal circumstances outside of a crisis like that one? It's first of all, of course, being clear in how we can make an impact every single day.
Yeah.
Among ourselves, you know, as we like to say, you know, charity starts at home. Purpose starts also, you know, in every day's lives. So we take that very, very seriously in terms of how we treat each other. How this concept of connecting people and improving lives starts with our own team members. But then we give space to all our team members to grow professionally, but also participate in the many things that we're doing to help the communities, right? And that purpose, as I was saying, you know, okay, half of the purpose, half of driving purpose in our view is what we do every day in the job. The other half is what we do to help the communities. We have a lot of programs where everyone can contribute to make a positive impact. So we even have a program that is called DHL Got Heart that is inviting everyone in the company, every single employee can participate and submit their own personal charities, social responsibility activities that we are doing on our own, and they all go through a selection process. They all receive some type of support. The winners receive a big contribution. It's a way to recognize and incentivize that we, you know, need to give back to the communities where we operate. And that is only one example. We have many. We have, for example, a partnership with the United Nations that is called the Disaster Response Team, where a team of experts in the company are activated when there is a disaster, a natural disaster. The main problems that countries have is that they receive tons of donations and the airports are collapsing and they don't know how to handle the logistics. So we deploy, we have hundreds of team members that are trained as DRT, Disaster Response Team. The United Nations will activate the DRT whenever there is a need to do so, and we will literally parachute into one of these airports and begin to help with the logistics. And that is, again, one of the many, many examples. We have a lot of that going on. And we put the same level of energy into developing a marketing program as to developing a social responsibility program. For us, this is not something that we need to do just to check a box. We truly believe in that. We truly believe that we need to make a positive contribution to the communities where we operate.
Yeah. That's wonderful. So creating a sense of purpose in your teams, in your employees, by inviting them to serve the community and not just the organization, of course the family, the organization, but also the community, and with that kind of expanding that sense of belongingness almost. Yeah. That's a wonderful concept. That's great. Now, Pablo, I know that we both share a passion, and that's the passion for soccer.
Yeah.
Actually, just before we started this conversation, we already went into talking about Miami and
Messi
playing there. And actually, I can tell you, when I grew up, well, there were not so many local soccer heroes. I'm from Switzerland, so I grew up playing in the t-shirt of Diego, Armando, Maradona, sometimes also Karl-Heinz Rummenigge. And obviously they clashed in their World Cup finals. And I know that you are a big fan of Messi now. I read in your LinkedIn article that you have been suffering 2014, the defeat, but celebrated life in Qatar. The huge victory, and I think it was a victory also of spirit and of mindset, of really wanting it. And you wrote an article sharing that there's four key messages on leadership also to learn from Messi, Lionel Messi, arguably the best soccer player in the world. And you said that's all about practice, purpose, passion, and persistence. I'll be happy to hear more about that.
Yeah, of course, big passion, as we know, right? And the World Cup was a unique experience. To experience that. So yeah, and I always love to take of these special circumstances and amazing stories like the one that, again, Messi had throughout his journey. And I always like to see, okay, how can we draw an analogy between that and leadership management? What can we learn? And that's why, you know, I came up with those four P's. It all starts with practice, right? Even the most successful player will start every single day going to the tennis court or to the driving range and hitting, you know, ball after ball after ball. And again, Messi, I think that he has showed that even be the most popular sports person on the planet, he's still going to training every single day. So nothing, as I like to say, consistency beats perfection, right? So it's very, very important to have that daily practice. It is definitely, of course, passion, as we were talking about, passion and how can you bring and unite either a management team, a leadership team on something that is bigger than the individual successes of the people. And I like to, as you saw in the article, I like to call it the ordinary passion. This is a term that I borrowed from Bono, the U2 singer, who in his song Ordinary Love, he talks about the type of love that you need for everyday success. It's not the type of love that will go away in 2 weeks. It's a type of love that requires compromises, that requires forgiving and ask for forgiveness, And I think that, I mean, the passion, you know, ordinary passion is the same as the passion that you continue pushing, you know, every day. And that's, you know, the other P, which is the persistence, right? Persistence to not giving up when things are not going the way that we expect, and that is guaranteed to happen. Messi is a great example that, you know, he had won almost everything, but he couldn't win the World Cup. He was very close in 14, and then many times he was about even to, you know, fail to win two finals of the Copa America, which, you know, was devastating. But he continued, right? The persistence combined. So yeah, that's what I took away from that experience, which I think that is a reflection of life many times.
Absolutely, very nicely put. And you know, when I see Messi, what really impresses me so much, and I'm hardly not able to understand how he's able to do it, is that he is so fast, obviously, right? He dribbles so fast, yet when I look at him, he's always calm.
Yeah.
And that, I think, gives him that agility, that flexibility on the field. That beautiful combination, which actually is not easy to live, right? Typically, when we are calm, we are not so fast, and when we are fast, we are lacking that calm. And if you want to bring it from the soccer field to the business arena, and if you reflect that we live in the world which is maybe changing faster than ever, some would say, others would say, well, it has never changed as slow as today, right? Because we know in another 5-10 years, 50% of today's jobs will not exist anymore, right? We will be working in profiles which we don't even dare to think of now. And if we also know that many organizations will not exist anymore, it's natural that we could be running, not just because we love it, but also out of fear, right? That we are driven beyond joy. It's more that fear which creeps into us as an individual, but also into organizations. And so how do you balance that? I started by commenting that I find that calm in you. I know Messi, he used to practice mindfulness. I've read about that. Is that a recipe which you use, or how? What is your recipe really on the mental level to be fast and then relaxed?
Yeah, of course, it requires a lot of discipline and awareness of how to tackle these challenges. Before I go into the tactics that I use, but some reflections about this context that you are describing, I think that a lot of my job these days is to separate what is noise from real change. Yeah. And I think that's something that you alluded to. You said, well, some people argue that we are changing faster than ever before. Some people say that we're moving super slow. Well, maybe the answer is somewhere in between, and depend which dimension of business we're talking about, some are moving faster. So I think that I have seen a lot of organizations falling into the trap of following the noise and not really understanding where there was real movement in the context where they were operating. I think that a lot of companies fall into the trap of what we call innovation, and even the worst enemy of innovation, in my view, is not a stagnation or the lack of movement, is the illusion of innovation. And some companies, and I have experienced this even in our own company, in parts of our company, where we had the illusion of innovation, and that was no more than, you know, not discipline, proper structure, allocation of resources in the pursuit of an illusion of innovation.
Yeah.
So I put a lot of time into safeguarding my team to some extent from separating what is noise from actual movement in the landscape. How do I, you know, do to try to keep as calm as possible? It's a suite of multiple tools, beginning with what you heard me say before, putting my own mask on first.
Yeah.
So I start in very practical terms, as much as possible, whenever I have the chance, I start every single day dedicated to doing, you know, half an hour, 1 hour, 90 minutes, depending on how much time do I have, to something that allows me to really reflect, cool down, either movement, yoga, meditation, As you know, I am a big fan of breathing techniques. So I love, you know, anything that has, you know, to do with breathing is super energizing and super calming. Reading things that inspire me, not only business reading, but reading things that are really good for my spirit and my thinking. So it's a suite of all of those type of the things, right? And trying to really protect and allocate time to taking care of my own mind, spirit, and physical body.
Yeah. I very much like that that idea of reducing that noise, right? And that illusion of innovation, just because we're doing so many things, but maybe that true intention is missing. Yeah. Einstein already used to say that his best, most creative moments were not at work, but somehow under the shower or when he took a walk, when there was an inner calm. Now, what I thought about, Pablo, is that, so you're the head of e-commerce division at DHL, right, which is huge, which is super successful. Now, this fourth industrial revolution, yes, what stands out is that things get faster and faster. We are talking about it. But also that obviously we get more and more into a digital working environment, the human being, the artificial intelligence become more and more one. And that's great. There's many advantages. Yes, we can receive a DHL package in no time from around the world. We can connect. We have become more productive. Yet when we talk about noise and reducing the noise, well, the noise has increased. 90% of all data that was ever produced has been produced in the last 2 years. The impact of, let's say, the digital working style on our ability to, for example, concentrate is huge. There is research showing that compared to a meta study has shown, if you look at 2003, that's just before Facebook came out, and today the attention span of people at work has reduced dramatically from 150 seconds at that time, 2003. So 150 seconds I'm able to focus on the screen at a time, in average, to now 44 seconds. The digital working environment is also associated with people finding it difficult to sleep, to switch off, switching off and switching on, for our mind, quite similar activities. Digital well-being has become a big topic, therefore. How do you support your people reducing that noise and being able to cope with that situation?
Yeah, I think that we are in the early stages of providing all the tools that we need and our people need in order to cope with that. We are doing some few things, but I truly believe, and our management team believes, that we need to be doing even more than that, because we don't know yet exactly which are the best practices and the antidotes and also the impact. So it's going to be a journey to begin with. But what we are doing in particular in terms of tools is first of all raising the awareness, just putting the topic on the table and saying, hey, this is something about digital well-being that needs to be handled, and that we need to acknowledge that, of course, digital noise and digital invasion that we have in our day-to-day lives could be negative in some aspects. Yeah. It enables people to do a lot more than what we were doing before, of course. But at the same time, it could be very, very destructive. And it's all, you know, the techniques about compartmentalizing the activities, scheduling time for no distractions, taking the time to set aside any type of digital device that could interfere, being present, you know, that is absolutely critical. We're more and more trying to encourage our team members to, when we have a meeting, better to have a 10 minute meeting without digital interference than a 1 hour with the phone picking it up every 2 minutes. So it's bringing all of those type of level of awareness to our people, and raising the consciousness that properly managed digital tools are very, very useful, but they could also be, you know, impacting negatively in our relationships.
Yeah. And in a certain way, we are really a living experiment, right? All these tools have been developed to be more productive, to increase the ability to connect. Yeah. Yes, that's great. But what is actually the effect on us as a human being? That is to be to be found out.
Absolutely,
really.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Pablo, many people look up to you. You have achieved a lot. You have gone through your own struggles. What would you say, looking back at your life, what is maybe the most important strategy that kept you going, or the most important learning? So what would you say is your secret of success to navigate through this so complex life, and of course to navigate through a business career so successfully?
I would probably summarize it on the umbrella concept of a growth mindset, and a growth mindset represented in the willingness to learn. Everything, you know, we're never a finished product. We're always evolving. And the moment that I think that we believe that we are a finished product, regardless how high you are or how much you have achieved, I think that we are done. So it's that growth, constant growth mindset, learning as a journey, a permanent journey. And also I would say gratitude, right? Gratitude, everything that happens to us happens for a reason. We might not see it very clearly when things happen, but down the road, everything will explain by itself. So having that gratitude, thankfulness, and openness to all the different circumstances that happen in our lives, I think is also a very good way to keep the motivation and the energy.
Absolutely. And I think what is important to reflect is that both mindset and gratitude is something we can develop, right? In a certain way, we are subject to our mindset, but research says that only short episodes can impact the mindset. I remember a piece of research which was done in a big bank during the downturn in 2008-09, where employees were shown two type of videos. One type of video was sending the message to the employees, stress is harmful, you will get sick. And the other video which was shown was sending the message, stress will increase your performance, it's very healthy. And guess what, that's exactly what happened. Yeah. One group got more back pain, the stress markers in the blood went up, and for the other one it went down. So it's very important what we take in, what we reflect on, it shapes us. And even gratitude can be practiced as research has shown, right? So. Is that something you pay attention to? Do you have a routine to reflect on your gratitude, or do you give space to it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that I pay a lot of attention when I am not in that mode, which is, you know, the other side of the coin. When I am feeling in those moments of maybe lacking the motivation, the energy, the gratitude, it triggers in me a very clear alarm that forces me to some extent to begin thinking in those, as you're saying, in those small instances of beginning to be thankful for and have gratitude. It's a very nice book that is called Atomic Habits. You might have heard about it and read about it, which is so true, right? That small things, sometimes it's better when you're exercising. We all go, you know, super motivated, say, I'm going to exercise 1 hour and run 1 hour per day, or go to the gym 1 hour. Maybe it's better to do this. Start with 5 minutes, right? Every single day, 5 minutes, and then 7 minutes. And even when you don't feel that motivated, and you were doing an hour, but let's keep the 5 minutes. And those are the type of things that are very impactful over time. Connecting that to gratitude, having the awareness of when you're not in that mindset of gratitude. Everyone, of course, they are extreme, very, very extreme situations. But even, you know, if you read the book in Search of Meaning, Viktor Frankl, you know, even in the worst of conditions where he was taken away, everything was taken away from him, he found the possibility of finding some type of gratitude. So I think we all have the possibility to find, when we are in that mindset, to find that one trigger that will begin to, with atomic habits, help us move in the right direction. And it's all about practice. You know, we are heavily influenced by our mind many times, most of the time. And it's about practicing, you know, the type of mindset that we want, and that will be a snowball that will get, you know, bigger and bigger.
Absolutely. These are these micro actions, micro moments, which make a macro impact.
Yeah.
In fact, I have a habit of thinking when I lie in bed of three things I'm grateful for. And there are these pieces of research, for example, two groups. One group is asked to exactly write down every day 3 to 5 things they're grateful for. The other group writes down 3 to 5 things they just did on that day. And the group which is grateful for anything, really, the smallest of small things, scores after a couple of weeks 20% higher in a happiness score.
Wow.
That's incredible. That's truly inspiring. And I am very grateful, Pablo, for being
Me too.
Here, for knowing you and that you have led us into the DHL building, and more importantly, that you have shared from your heart what you have learned about life, but also as a leader. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And it was a pleasure that you all have joined. Please don't miss out to subscribe. You see the button, and stay with us. Soon more to follow. Let's stay in touch.
Thank you, Christoph. Thank you, everyone. Thanks.